You're listening to WWBC Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
And Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Coco, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere.
All over the World Wide Web. And if you're listening to us right now, you can go to 1510wwbc.com, can hit that Listen Live button and get us on any one of your listening devices. Or if you'd like to hear an archive of the show, you can also go to the on-demand section, just pick the date. And we also post within 24 hours on our website, which is SitaMediaInc.com, and also on our Facebook pages, which is Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and then, of course, on Sita's personal page, which, good luck to be a friend, because I think she's at the max.
Yeah.
You just have to watch and listen from afar.
Yeah, you know, you're so right, right? I would put something on my Facebook page that's so very important, mm-hmm. about Medicaid expansion or something like that. Mm-hmm. Nobody gives a hoot. Then I go and I put, a squirrel was in the yard eating the mangoes.
Right.
And everyone is on that squirrel.
They've named the squirrel.
Yeah, and it's like, well, all right, fine. My friends just want to relax and hang out. They don't want serious topics. They want to talk about the squirrel stealing the mangoes.
There you go.
And my husband putting a Persian rug under his mango tree.
That's right.
For the mangoes to fall. Old one. So for our listeners who are tuning in today, on Mondays, Ellen O'Neill, myself, Ali, Danny, we sit here and we have 1 hour of fun, education. We give out valuable information to folks out in the community, whether they want to save money, spend money, make money, run for office, write a book. Maybe somebody wants to go to the Brevard Zoo and take their family. Maybe someone wants to go to the beach. Whatever it is, we care about the environment. We care about our people and all our cultures. And so our show is a community show. We're heard worldwide, and that's what we do on Mondays. And today's no different. Today we invited our friends from the Brevard Zoo to come in and speak with us about the aquarium. I can't say propose anymore because it's happening, correct?
Yay.
So Stephanie Mosedale, who is the director of philanthropy. I hope I said that.
Philanthropic, yeah.
Philanthropic, we said it correctly. She's here, and Zach Marchetti, he is the community engagement and outreach officer for the Brevard Zoo. Welcome to our show.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
And you guys are going to be on the second segment, because the first segment, we have a repeat guest. I don't know, Ellen, if you remember our friend Shauna Verscher. She is an author. She is a political media strategist. She now has her own media company. She just took her daughter to college. So that's something we'll talk about in a minute. I remember when she called in before and we spoke about her, Maddie, and she was only 12 or 13 back then. Shauna learned that it was too late to trust law enforcement way back in the day, and she wrote a book, and her book was called, I believe, A Fearless Voice, and we had talked about that when she took matters into her own hands, so to speak. So, Shauna, you're on the phone, and thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, it's been a while since we spoke to you, and you've been to Brevard, so you know the layout of the land over here. I remember you spoke at the Melbourne Chamber of Commerce. We had recommended you to a friend, and you spent a night at my home, and we're friends. So I'm so glad. Last night we said, oh, she needs to come back and spend the night and have tea or coffee or maybe Dr. Biggie's eggs and a nice dinner, and I think we'll follow up on that. But bring us up to speed. What have you been doing since the last time you came on the show?
Well, I've been up to a lot. I think all of us kind of took a chance during the height of the pandemic to assess where we are, what we want our lives to be, and how we want to serve and leave a mark in the world. And I was no different. So definitely, as you mentioned, I've been focusing on mom duties, getting my daughter ready for college and enjoying her senior year. But also on the social advocacy side, I've been really focusing on building our social justice production company. We're producing some films and television to get people more engaged and involved from various different backgrounds. And we're getting ready to launch a number of different efforts to essentially encourage people to stay at the table, get more involved in their communities, particularly at a local level. Change happens in our own backyard, as you guys are going to be talking about throughout the show, and not get scared away by some of the things they see on television or scared of politics in general. We want to welcome voices to the table from a lot of different backgrounds in life. So that's what we've been doing.
And you said two words that really hits right into my heart is what I talk about all the time, which is staying engaged and involved in our communities. Because nothing happens if all of us collectively don't wake up and say, I care about the roads, I care about education, I care about our schools, I care about our waterways, I care about our children, like all children, not just my own, and all human beings. And too often people focus so much on the negatives, and they don't focus on the positives and what we can do collectively when we cast a vote. So what is your strategy to encourage more people to literally get off the couch and stop procrastinating and making excuses and say, listen, I am going to vote because people died to give me that right? And how do you plan to encourage them?
Well, I think you actually touched on it with your story about the mangoes and social media. We are so inundated with so much negativity and so much divisiveness that it is really, even for myself as someone who's in the media space, I also do some very serious crisis management work, and that can be extremely draining and damaging for our own mental health. And so it's really important to try to find a balance. That's my first thing I try to say to people. Like, definitely switch off the news, take a walk outside, go to that new aquarium when it's open, like whatever you need to do to recharge, do it. But to tune it out completely will have the opposite impact, because it's not something that's just this nebulous concept that doesn't impact us every day. If you're a homeowner, you're seeing homeowner insurance change. If you buy groceries at the grocery store, there was a huge shift in inflation. They're trying to get that back down now. If you have kids in school, there's so many issues that people are talking about impacting our kids. The environment impacts everyone, and now, you know, climate change is at our door, so it's not also a theoretical, it's here. So it's important for us to stay involved as we can. With some guidelines, but I also feel like you can't tackle everything. So find those one or two things that you get really passionate about and find a way to get involved in a way that meets your schedule and feels comfortable to you. Everyone is an activist in their own right, in their own way. For some people, voting is a challenge. Getting there, getting childcare, missing work, we can't take those things for granted. For other people, voting is making a plan to vote, and maybe they can also volunteer. Maybe they can give of their time or their treasure to something that matters to them. So I think it's really important for people to not get discouraged, protect themselves, take small steps, and get involved in a way that makes themselves feel comfortable.
Right. Or they can be like us, the immigrants who choose to immigrate and love this country and appreciate being on American soil, and say, my goodness, you have 10 days of early voting. You can vote online. You can vote by mail. What a great country this is that gives you this much time to vote. Whereas so many countries like India and Indonesia and in the Caribbean, you don't have 10 days of early voting. You know, I just feel like saying to people, dude, you don't know how good you have it. And I do feel as like sometimes messaging is everything, and personal stories do somehow make a difference when you tell people. When I say that to people all the time, when they say I didn't vote, I'm like, why? I said, I didn't have time. I'm like, well, do you understand? And then they'll say, you're right. So I think sometimes people on both sides, Democrats and Republicans, we have to remind people that this is a great nation, and we can vote if we, like you say, make the plan. So how do we get more people to message it properly that you know, it's not an excuse anymore not to vote. If you're a valid age and you are using the roadways and your kids are going to public school and you're getting financial assistance with daycare and you know, a job and everything else, there are programs that we all pay for, and we essentially vote for these things. So how do we get more people to say, you know what, you're correct, we need to pay attention?
I think that more people are paying attention. I feel like it's really difficult to discern what's true and what's not, and more to the point, what's hopeless and what's not. It's really, I think for people that are engaged, that have witnessed some fantastic progress through a different lens over the last several years, or maybe they saw a local candidate defy odds and win a local election, then it's easy to see that change matters and that your vote matters. But if you've never witnessed that and you've never been a part of anything like that, it's easy to fall prey to this message that, oh, everyone's corrupt, or nothing's ever going to get better, or, you know, none of this really matters. It's just a broken system. I'm going to be the first one to say that there are huge fundamental areas of improvement in democracy from the top down. That's not going to change overnight. But I've also seen some amazing, beautiful, fantastic work, like federal, local, and everything in between, that has really impacted and saved lives. So I think the first thing is not to get discouraged and fall prey to the idea that your voice doesn't matter. If your voice didn't matter, then bad guys wouldn't be working so hard to silence it. There's this whole idea that it's red versus blue. I do think that the parties have fundamental differences. I'm not going to deny that. But as voters, I feel like it's important. I'm Texan, so I use a lot of football terminology. But, you know, we all, like, get mad at a player on the field, and meanwhile, no one's watching the owners of the teams that really control all of the money.
Yes.
I feel like, you know, the more we are fighting with each other as neighbors and as a community, no one's keeping an eye on the ownership and the big money that is shaping our everyday lives, how we communicate online, what jobs are available to us, what industries move into our backyard, how safe our food is. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. We really have to stay at the table. And yeah, be competitive, root for your team, you know, go out there and support your candidate. But if that candidate doesn't win, do not pack up and give up on your love of this country and of your own backyard and of the friends and family that matter to you.
Right. Well, you know, at the end of the day, we all want to leave a good footprint behind for our grandchildren, the next generation, whether it's with the environment or through education or healthcare, or like you say, whatever your passion is. But, you know, when I think of you, you entered the national spotlight, and you worked for such notable people, award-winning celebrities, and you ran such great campaigns. What do you see for the future in upcoming elections as the headlines? What are we going to be looking at? Is it women's rights? What do you think is going to be catchy?
So I think this is going to be, we always say this, and it sounds like we're being, you know, exaggerating in our tone, but I can assure you, in all seriousness, this is going to be an election like absolutely no other. It is highly possible that one of the nominees for president may be sitting under indictment. That has never, ever happened in our nation's history before. Watching that process, the judicial process, is going to be in the spotlight like never before. I mean, those of us of a certain age remember the OJ trial and how we thought that dominated the airwaves. Yeah. This is the white Ford Bronco times 1,000. This is going to be the story. But in addition to that, as far as, like, when you take away the sensationalism and the historic impact of that, then it's really going to be some of the less sensational headlines that really matter. How is inflation going to change? We're seeing fantastic job reports, which are great at a top level, but when will people in our own backyard feel it? What will happen with, you know, the homeowner's insurance skyrocketing? Alimony for a number of people was just adjusted here in the state. Those pocketbook issues are very real. Women's health issues are economic issues. If anyone with children, myself included, can tell you that children are expensive, healthcare is expensive. So I feel like that's going to be an economic talking point. But I also feel like the democracy that we're shaping in this new generation, how we communicate with each other, where are are we getting our news? How are we speaking to each other? What is this new normal that we're trying to create with the next generation on whose voices get amplified and how we speak about really tough, emotionally charged issues? That's really important for everyone to pay attention to.
Right. I think it's almost as though people need to sit down and have conversations around their kitchen table or on their steps or wherever they sit down and congregate and relax. Oh, for me, it's online sometimes. But I mean, it's like, I met this woman. She says, oh, we have to wait 2 months for someone to come and look at our roof. Well, think about what you're saying. Look, who are working on the roofs in the hot, stinking sun? Immigrants, a lot, right? Who are the people that are not going to be able to drive in Florida now, you know, with a lot of laws coming out of Tallahassee? Then another girl said, oh, my cantaloupe, I had to pay $3 more. Well, are you going to be working in the fields to pick these fruits and these crops? Because I know I won't. I'll be with 10 umbrellas picking one cucumber if I have to. But the thing is, because that's not my thing. I'm a nurse. But I mean, I think if people start thinking in the terms of, they say, oh, I don't want to talk politics. But you just told me two political things. So how do you get people to take everyday scenarios and turn it into, wait a minute, gosh darn it, you are right. We need to start thinking about who are we voting for, and does the person working on your roof have health insurance? If he falls off the roof, who does it affect? You know, there's a lot of questions with human beings. So how do you get more people to say, let's talk every day about what's going on?
Well, politics is power. That's the thing. I know that I am Southern. I was raised Southern. And so we were always told, you know, you don't talk about politics, you don't talk about religion, you don't talk about money. And here we are having to talk about all of it in very open spaces, and we're navigating that. It's very new to some people, and I think that might be generational and sometimes geographical with certain people. You know, politics, it is ugly and nasty and sinister. It can be corrupt, of course, as can any power. But we never want to give away our power and our self-worth. And so even if you're not 100% sure how you feel about everything, you don't feel very educated on every issue, that's okay. Show that you care. Show that you showed up. I use an example of, you know, I work very closely with certain Muslim organizations I have in years past. And when, right after 2001, it's easy to argue that Muslims had a branding problem, to say the least, in this country after September 11th. And as a community, they worked together to try to, you know, go past that in a number of ways. And one of the ways they did that is to lobby their own communities to vote in whatever way that they felt that they needed to vote. And then to take those numbers to local officials and say, listen, we're here, we vote, pay attention to us, respect us. So if you're a nurse, if you show, listen, I can show you that 80% of the nurses I work with vote, you need to pay attention to nurses' issues. You might not have an issue yet. I'd like to meet you if you don't, because there's so much going on right now.
Well, yeah, they but all complain about staff. Well, you know, a lot of nurses would complain about staffing. But look at what's going on in Tallahassee, and who signed a bill that X amount of patients per nurse or per nurse's aide is legal. I mean, it takes a normal person at least 30 minutes to brush your teeth, comb your hair, put on some lotion, you know, get ready for the day, put on some makeup. But yet still, a nursing assistant is required to take care of 11 patients on the 3-to-11 shift. How on earth are you going to take care of a 11 people if they're soiled, if you have to feed them, you have to put their dentures in? So I think people will say things, but they don't think about how it impacts their profession. And you're absolutely correct. If nurses start paying attention and they vote, we would have better outcomes with the nursing staffing ratios as well. And I'm glad you said something about the Muslims too, because after 9/11, I had heard someone saying something very derogatory. And I said, listen, go pick up one of the Health First book and see how many physicians in that book has a Muslim last name, and then talk. Because you and your family are being cared for by your heart, your lungs, your liver, your spleen, everything else by these folks. So don't be mean and don't be rude. They're here working in Brevard, paying taxes in Brevard, and they're just like you and I. They just have a different religion, you know? So I think when you talk to people and you make them see reason, and the person said, you're absolutely correct, I hadn't thought of it that way. You know, so talking to people makes a big difference.
Yeah, talking does make a huge difference, and to each other, absolutely. But voting is just the beginning of the process. Whoever wins that election, they now work for you. So you have a right to organize and go to, you know, make a meeting with them and say, hey, I'm concerned about this legislation, and I feel like you need to consider some different viewpoints. Legislation can be changed. Rules and laws can be modified. But what tends to happen is only the powerful who know the system and can work the system, their voices tend to be at the table more than everyone else. It takes a very small group of people to really steer an outcome when they are organized. Now, I'm not talking about Congress and Senate and President. That's a very large thing that is important, and you should stay involved in that. But at a local level, if even 5 to 10 people, you know, got dressed up, went and sat down with their mayor and said in an organized way, listen, we're concerned about this. Can you help us, like, work with us with Tallahassee to try to get this adjusted? This isn't reasonable. I guarantee you, you would have that mayor's attention. So big organized groups are great, but don't discount the power of your local voice. It really does matter.
So for our listeners who is tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, we're speaking with Shauna Presley-Versher. She's an award-winning political media strategist and is social justice executive producer of films, television, and online content. So, Shauna, with a few minutes left, you are a political strategist, and you're responsible to helping candidates to craft their message and build a strategy to win. How do you do that in the face of so much fear and hate and division right now, not just locally but nationally? How do you get your message out for your candidate when there's so much misinformation and some people like to say disinformation? What is your strategy as a strategist? Because it's too much out there, and people are like, they don't know what to believe anymore.
Yeah, we have a saying that we say all the time with my team, which is to find the heartbeat of every issue. A lot of people, particularly newer candidates or candidates trying to make it, they want to have big, large discussions, or maybe take a cheap shot at someone in power like a Trump or a Biden. And that might feel good in the moment, but you're not going to actually connect in a way that's meaningful. So we try to take every issue and say, this is something that I care about. Here's why. Personalize it whenever possible. Talk to other people that are not you and say, this is how it impacted their lives, and this is why I think you should care about it. And then this is what you can do about it. It's really easy to get people scared or angry and just leave them there and manipulate that negative emotion. But I think it takes a lot of work and discipline to tune that out and say, no, it's just you and me right now. It's our country, it's our community, it's our city, it's our state. Let's look at each other in the eye and let's pledge to do something that matters and that we can be proud of. The rest of it is just noise. And when you have something real and authentic like that, we do get a lot of traction. We have an audience of millions of people that respond to that content. And is it tempting to get angry and snippy on certain days? Yeah, absolutely. Just told you I'm Texan. I will own that completely.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that's not going to win friends and trust. And when people disagree with me, they still trust me, and that is worth more in the long term, and that's how we actually turn a candidate into a legislator that can craft policy that actually makes a difference.
Yeah, it's almost like a marriage. You know, what makes a marriage work sometimes is respect and trust. And when you have a candidate that you're going to be working for, volunteering and helping, those two things come to mind all the time. But we're watching sometimes you see candidates who bully other people and tweet stuff that's wrong and just mean and hateful. I mean, a person gives up their time and takes time away from their wife and children and friends and family and to run for office. It's not easy putting yourself out there and your name and trying to make a difference in your community or your state or nation. But we're seeing that's like cybersecurity is a part of what's happening right now. How does a candidate or a political strategist such as yourself protect your candidate from bullying on social media or cybersecurity and things like that?
We protect our candidates from reading as much of that as possible. It is really hard on your mental health. I've been in the public eye for years now, and you know, I've worked really hard on you know, different radio segments or television segments, and then have people approach me in the airport and say, oh, I didn't like your hair that day. And I'm like, thanks.
I don't know what to say.
It is very hard to be in the public eye. So we try to shield them from as much negativity as possible and instead replace that with real people's stories. These are people that you've already inspired or people you could impact once you're in office. You know, I would say to people listening that, you know, if you are a parent or if you've ever been in love, that love is unconditional and people are human. And whether it's the candidates messing up or whether it's the country that is struggling a little bit in front of us, that love should be unconditional as much as possible there, but with guidelines and healthy boundaries. We love this country, but we need to demand the most of it. We love the idea of some of these candidates. They will disappoint us sometimes because they're human, but that doesn't mean you give up on them. It doesn't mean that you walk away. It means that we need to nurture that love and be a little bit more present as they need us and help guide it where we want it to go.
Yeah, and understand they're human as well. Well, before you leave, I know we only have a couple of minutes, but I want you to tell our listening audience here on Viewpoint with Seton and Friends a little bit, if you can, about your book, A Fearless Voice, and where they can find it and where they can find you if they wanted to, you know, get involved with maybe making a film or sending an idea for you or helping message your campaigns or whatever. So give us a little tidbit about your book and where we can find it.
Thanks so much. So A Fearless Voice is on Amazon and in a number of bookstores. It was top 25 when it was first released. We've re-released it, and we're going to be having additional editions with new chapters that talk about the current climate and how our justice system needs to be repaired. We're currently working on a number of amazing social justice projects, but we're always looking for new stories and new people's stories to amplify. So if you want to find me on social media, I'm on just about everything, and it's Shauna, S-H-A-W-N-A, Vercher, V as in Victor, E-R-C-H-E-R, and there's only one of me aside from a very normal accountant, I believe, in Seattle, whose social media presence I have wrecked. So I would love to hear from you, and we'll be releasing a couple of cool documentaries and projects in the near future, so I'd love for people to participate in that as it rolls forward.
So do you have time to tell our audience a little bit about your book, like to kind of entice someone who wants to buy it?
I am a crisis manager and fixer, and one of my clients who was a D-level celebrity, he became an alleged, I have to mind that my attorneys are always listening and protecting me while I'm on the air, an alleged stalker of mine. And so I went from someone who's behind the scenes and behind the camera helping my clients to someone who was in every major newspaper on this, you know, ESPN ticker, and it's considered still today one of the top 10 scandals in sports. So as someone who has advocated for social justice and for my clients and for victims, it was very surreal to be on the other end of that and to feel like the justice system re-victimized myself and my family while this was happening. But spoiler alert, she lives. And I hope that it's a story that inspires people to not look away and get crushed when things get devastatingly hard, but to look around for the helpers, as they say, because it ultimately position me in what I feel like changed my life to be in an even better position to advocate on behalf of others. So hopefully people will see it as a story of triumph.
Oh, I know. I read it. It was wonderful. And really quickly, can you tell us some of the campaigns that you worked on that was successful?
I mean, I've worked on a number. I helped to flip the Doug Jones Senate seat in Alabama, which I was very proud to do because my late grandfather was from Alabama. You guys in your community might remember that we helped elect Patrick Murphy to Congress and unseat Alan West, which was interesting. I've, of course, worked for President Obama at the time, Senator Obama, in 07 and 08 to help elect him. But I've also worked for Governor Jeb Bush, and I've worked with a number of Republican legislators in Louisiana and Virginia to pass legislation. So that kind of unnerves people when I tell them that, yes, I am a Democrat. I'm very proud of that, but I'm American first, and I'm also an advocate more than anything. So I've worked on both sides of the aisle and actually gotten legislation passed unanimously in some very deep red and deep blue areas to help other people. So I know that it can be done. It just takes a lot of work, and I hope that people listening are ready to do just a little bit of that in the season ahead, because we definitely need you.
Yeah, just sometimes we just have to step out of our comfort zone and listen to each other and tune out all the background noises from the negative people. And I think we get the answers from within. But, you know, when you said you're a fixer, what comes to mind is Michael Cohen.
Yeah.
I'm like, you can't be a fixer.
We prefer more Olivia Pope, or I'll take Batman.
Yeah, okay, there you go. There you go.
Like,
much
I'll get my friend be a fixer. Oh, my goodness. But I love you. Thank you so much for calling. And you're such a delightful friend and a person to chat with. You always bring perspective to everything you talk about. And I'm just like you in the middle. I think about both sides. And I want to leave a good footprint behind on planet Earth. So it's nice to have like-minded friends.
So again, three messages, right? Choose your battles, perseverance, and dedication. Right?
Right.
All of those things.
And
thank
be
you.
Human.
That's
like
right.
You said earlier, Ellen, when you walked in, you're human.
That's right. We're all human. Thank God. Thank God. But we have to listen to our sponsors real quick here on Viewpoint with C-Debt and Friends. Thank you so much, Shauna, for calling in and sharing the airwaves with us. And we'll be right back with these right after these messages with Viewpoint with C-Debt and Friends.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9.
Welcome
Mattress
to MedFast
and Furniture.
Urgent Care. We are Brevard County's largest urgent care network. MedFast is now open at 7:30 a.m. every day. That's right, 7:30 a.m. every day. We will get you in and out so you can get back to your day. When you are sick or injured, MedFast is here for you 7 days a week. Think fast, think MedFast. With 18 locations, there's a MedFast near you.
Are you
Call
longing for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine in or take out as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral, and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com.
There's something accounting special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We're heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and goodness gracious, online everywhere.
All over the World Wide Web. You can go to 1510wwbc.com and hit that Listen Live button and get us on any one of your listening devices. Or if you'd like the download version, you can hit the On Demand button and certainly download it by date. Or you can go to our website, which is cedamediainc.com, or any one of our Facebook pages, and we'll be making sure that all of that information is posted with links so everybody can stay in touch. What a great first segment with Shauna.
Yeah, Bircher. I'm always inspired by her.
She's
not
awesome.
Only she's beautiful, brilliant, and boy, she's got great ideas how to lead our great nation forward.
She really does.
Which is great. So our second segment is with our friends from the Brevard Zoo. Zach Marchetti is here and Stephanie Mosdell, and we'll start off with Steph. Thank you for coming on our show and tell our listeners a little bit about what you do at the Brevard Zoo.
It is an honor to be back here. I believe we last spoke online in 2019. I am the director of philanthropy at Brevard Zoo. I have the honor of what we call happy fundraising. So I get to connect people's passion and purpose with a meaningful way to make a difference. So that's pretty incredible. And I am helping with the huge initiative to build an aquarium and conservation center in our community.
Thank you. Likewise, we're happy to have you here. And I know we always see each other at the zoo events and stuff.
Yes.
And it feels good to have friends who care about Brevard County, Florida, and the community.
Yes.
You guys it just shows that everyone at the zoo just shines. And Zach, you come highly recommended from everybody. Well, you've got to get Zach on the show. He's just wonderful. And he'll give you the best tour of the Brevard Zoo. And he'll talk about the aquarium at Port Canaveral. So welcome and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you so much, Sita. It's wonderful to be here. And my name is Zach. I am the Community Engagement and Outreach Officer at Brevard Zoo. And that is a position that's actually fairly recent to me. I've been in the zoo field for about 15 years, but most of it has been on the animal side. But my passion has always been connecting people with those animals and with the environment. And so when this project came along, it was just incredible and neat celebration of everything that is our wildlife. The opportunity to be part of that and be part of really working to connect people with not only this project, but our environment, our wildlife, too good to pass up.
So some fast facts about the Brevard Zoo. It opened when? In 1994,
mm-hmm.
was it?
Yep.
Number of animals. Stephanie, do we know how many animals? The last time I heard it was 900. Did it go up?
We like to say 800 plus. It's always a little bit varying, but around the 900 range.
And species, how many species? I think last time it says 195.
Spoonbills, spider monkeys,
squirrel
monkeys. No.
Jaguar. Yes.
That's pretty accurate.
Many.
And I'm always amazed at how many visitors would you attract that comes to the Brevard Zoo. I know, now I'm going to say over 400 plus.
Yeah, and actually last year we broke 500 for the first time. 525,000 for the first time.
What? That's amazing. So bring us up to speed while Danny is checking all our mics out and stuff. Bring us up to speed about what's going on at the zoo. I know there's a lot of things going on, and everybody I meet, they keep asking, hey, what's going on with that aquarium? Are they still building it, and where is it going to be built? So give us the news on that.
So, yes, the aquarium is coming. It is absolutely going to be built. We have the site locked down. So September of 2021, we were able to lock down a 14-acre site from the port. So it's right out of Port Canaveral on the Banana River, just off of 528, so exit 54B. And instead of going to the restaurants, you turn, there's a dead end. But on that dead end, on that chain of defense, there's a big old sign that says future site of the park. So we have that land locked down. We are $64 million towards our $100 million goal. And that $100 million campaign that we're calling our legacy campaign is to build this incredible new aquarium and conservation center out of the port, but also to continue to support the zoo. Like you said, there's always new things happening. So we are going through major renovations in our Africa Loop right now to make the new 16,000 square foot home for our three beautiful lion boys, as well as make additional improvements to that area. So always things happening kind of both sides, but certainly our biggest focus right now, especially for Stephanie and myself.
Right. And Steph, you want to talk a little bit about the conservation part of it? Because people, we know it's about education, right? It's helping the Indian River Lagoon. It's going to be bringing jobs to the area. But a lot of people don't understand when you tell them what conservation is. They're like, oh, what are you talking about? So give our listening audience a little education about why it's important to conserve and what it's all about.
Absolutely.
Because you're going to have a conservation center.
We are. And it's actually going to be called one of our local heroes, the Dr. Duane DeFries Coastal Conservation Hub, which we're really excited about and proud to just even have his name in our presence is incredible, because he's been such a warrior for the lagoon for, I believe, his entire career. But, you know, we have a really sick lagoon right now. And even though we're seeing improvements, I think Zach actually puts it perfectly, is that we're sort of putting a Band-Aid on an arterial bleed. We have so many great little organizations out there trying to make a difference for our waters. You know, but there's just not one thing that got it to where we are and made it sick, and there's not just one thing that's going to fix it. So we have to work together, and the beauty of this conservation hub is that, you know, we're non-governmental, we're not associated with any institutions, and we really can be that, like, neutral space where everybody can come together and collaborate and make true change. It's also it's an important and powerful opportunity to educate people on what the problems are and how you can be a difference. That's just really the Brevard Zoo way. Education is such an important part of conservation. And then really living those differences, and whether you're, you know, I'll let Zach go into all the different ways that you can make a difference, because he probably can say that even better.
How do we promote our unique way of life here on the Space Coast? My goodness, we're the Space Center, right? And how do we get more people to donate, to attract more human capital, not just engineers and humans, to help with this project with the aquarium and the conservation center and still support the Brevard Zoo, but to educate them of why this is important for the future? We are close to Cape Canaveral. People are coming off our ships. We're a hub. We're like a real busy hub of everything.
Yes, we are. And that's one of the things that kind of makes this area so fascinating. We have this incredibly, the busiest cruise port in the world currently. Space program.
And that's not going to change.
No, it is not. and we have 1,000 people moving to Florida every single day still. And what we end up with is this kind of conglomerate of different groups of people that have lived here. They've seen the lagoon in its prime. They've seen it drop. They've seen it change. We have people that have shown up during different times of the degradation and of the loss. We have people that pop in now for the weekend, they rent a jet ski, they see a manatee, and they think it's paradise and don't have any idea that anything's wrong. And really what it comes down to is exactly what we were talking about, or what you were talking about earlier with Shauna, was talking and having these individual conversations, stories,
one-on-one,
and finding ways to relate, individuals, their needs, their cares, their investments. So looking at people that financially benefit, people that are recreationally tourists. People kind of say, oh, well, what are tourists? Well, remember that, yes, we are trying to protect the lagoon, but we're also trying to protect the planet. Right? That's that sort of pie-in-the-sky goal that nobody wants to talk about, but really what we're trying to do, we're trying to save the whole world, right?
Yes.
And so the idea...
And we should. What is our purpose on Earth?
Exactly.
It doesn't belong only to us.
We got to stop paving paradise and putting up parking lots.
Exactly.
The animals need a space, too. Sea animals.
They do. And they need... And we need that space. Now, there is so much evidence that spending time in nature increases your mental health, your physical health.
Reduces your blood pressure.
Absolutely.
Now,
so important.
Now, in addition to this, I understand there's going to be a facility for rehabilitation for the animals. So let's talk a little bit about that, because oftentimes when humans get hurt, go to the hospital, and then they end up at one of the rehab facilities, and then God forbid they don't have family and friends to take care of them, they end up staying long term. Give us the information, what's happening with the rehab part of this.
So there's a couple of different components of rehab that will be going on at the aquarium, and they are essentially extensions of things that we're doing currently or preparing to do. So we have an amazing sea turtle healing center at the zoo. In February, we released our 200th successfully rehabbed turtle, and we have now since gone up to or something like that, I think.
Her name was Hope.
Her name was
Hope.
And it was a wonderful.
Yeah, I bet it was.
But there's two problems with that facility. One is that it's not big enough. We still run out of space sometimes. The other is that a lot of people don't get to see it. It's built 20 years after the zoo opened, and so it had to be built behind the scenes in order to follow all the protocols and things for rehab. Yeah. So with the new aquarium, we will be adding a second sea turtle hospital, so not a replacement, but an addition, so it gives us more space for turtles. It'll be built in a guest-facing way so that guests can see not only the turtles that are coming in and in these smaller rehab pools where their movement is restricted, oftentimes because it needs to be, but they'll also be able to see into the veterinary clinic, and see into the procedure room, and watch the care that our vets and our vet techs get, see the types of equipment, the types of procedures that go in, and then also have this big, beautiful, themed, fabricated space where either turtles that are almost ready to go back, they don't need that small space yet, but they're still building strength, they can be there, or
so
those
patients be released.
That may never make it back.
Yeah.
And my favorite part of the rehab, and not necessarily at the zoo, but all rehabs that I've experienced as far as Sea Life goes, is that there's always been an education about this is why they're in rehab. It's because of the fishing wire. It's because of the, no offense, Danny. It's because of the cigarette butts or because of the pollution that's out in the water. And hopefully with that, you can see something that's living that suffered because of
your action.
Right.
Yeah, our doing.
I mean, we can all save the planet by just changing our actions, right?
Absolutely.
Change but our behaviors.
Behavior change is hard, right? It's hard to get people even, like you said, to get up off the couch to vote.
Oh, my God.
How are you going to get them to change the things that they buy?
Bad
the
behavior.
Way
there's bad.
Changing behavior is hard, but
Nanny-sita comes out.
Yeah. So, Stephanie, the Brevard Zoo was built, I remember it was about maybe 16,000 or 17,000 engineers and scientists and business owners and community leaders and people who cared, they built that zoo. So with that same energy, these people are going to be helping to build the aquarium. How are you reaching out and how is this project going to be funded? We need $100 million. We're up to 64.
Yes.
So tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, if they've got a little change to spare and some rich aunties and uncles and friends, to tell them to donate.
Yes, and before we forget, I need Zach to tell you about manatees, but we'll come back
to that.
So we have such a unique, amazing community that truly all came together back in the early 90s to build a zoo with hammers and nails, and you know, they took their PTO, and this is what they did. I think there was some area where all the children were watched together so the parents could build. But we really are a community-built and community-driven zoo. So it is the community's, we want this to be the community's aquarium, just like our zoo is the community's zoo. It'll be your aquarium, it'll be my aquarium, it'll be our aquarium. But we need everybody to be a part of this, whether it's through volunteerism, whether it's through just sharing your passion and excitement about this and telling every single person you know in your circle and beyond to just learn about it and get involved in whatever way is possible for you. But, you know, we did, you know, if you want to run numbers, because, you know, I am in fundraising, if just the entire population of Brevard County gave $20 a year for the next 5 years, what is that, 4 Starbucks or something a year, then we could build this aquarium right now.
Well, just be nice and give the $100 right up front.
Well, I mean,
like,
amen.
Because you're going to forget.
I mean, you know, people focus on, you know, the big funders, which we absolutely need. We absolutely need the people that have a lot of money. We need the corporations and organizations that are able to do that as well. But we need everybody. Everybody needs to be, play a part in this, and not just because
you have
can,
skin
but
in the
because
game.
It's exciting.
Right?
And it really, we call it our legacy campaign because truly, this isn't just another attraction. Like, this is something that's going to be transformational for our waters, for the next generations to come, well beyond what we'll even see. So, I mean,
it's a true legacy, right?
Yeah.
I like that. Who came up with that name, legacy campaign? I mean, that's
definitely a group effort.
It's beautiful.
Yes.
Because it's the truth. It's something you're leaving behind, right?
Absolutely.
And speak a little bit about, either one of you, about the hands-on training with science and research. Like, a lot of people don't think about it, but the Brevard Zoo, the education, deals so much with science and research. And you guys are enabling so many children who want an avenue to express themselves and learn more to come to the zoo and put their hands into the sand and the little vertebrae and the little bones and everything and learn something.
Yeah, we have an incredible education program at Brevard Zoo that covers, you know, a lot of kind of classic programs and things, teaching kids about animals and stuff, but also has some really unique and really special ones as well. Our Lagoon Quest program gets every fourth grader in Brevard County Public Schools a chance to get out into the lagoon for 2 days and use seine nets to corral the little species of minnows that are in the shallows and take a look at them and learn to identify them and really sort of get into touch and make that connection with the environment that they're growing up in, which is so important because so many of our kids are growing up inside. And in Florida, I have a 7-year-old. I want to keep him inside a lot of the time in the summer, too.
Yeah.
It's hot. So that makes it so much more important to take every opportunity to have those connections. And this facility is going to allow us to do even more because we'll have those classrooms to expand the work that we're doing. But we'll also have these really, really neat professional-level wet laboratories that visiting researchers do. PhD student from FIT. It could be somebody from Megafauna Foundation.
Anywhere,
space. Yeah. And while they're there working, we've got field trips coming. And so maybe you have a group of 8th graders or sophomores that are really figuring out where they're going in their life, and they get to stand in the same lab as this professional researcher, right? And they get this understanding that this is real.
Yeah.
They're real people. They make that connection. And so giving those kids that opportunity.
Well, we're talking about our future, right?
Exactly.
Of our future. So you know how we have the video games that kids like to sit down and play and interact with their friends all over the place? My grandchildren, Roblox, don't like it. Do you guys have any interactive programs like that where the children could at least learn something that way and then say, hey, now that I've done it here online and through social media and through an app, now I can go in person to the zoo and actually see what I'm learning?
So we have done some virtual programs. Especially during COVID, we switched to complete virtual, and since then have kept some of those virtual programs and are now kind of looking at how do we use some of the newer technology that's available and becoming available to give kids future opportunities. So one of the sort of long-term plans for the aquarium, this is not something that we would have at the opening, but is this large, essentially exhibit gallery that we can use projectors and newer technology to transport people really anywhere in the
world. Like to hook them in. You want to hook those kids.
Virtual reality.
Exactly.
And once you hook them, you say, great, now you could come in.
Exactly.
Right. So right now you can virtual reality swimming as a scuba diver,
yeah,
if you will.
Right.
And you can identify fish and you get points for identifying fish. There are those types of apps. But unfortunately, for us, that seems so foreign, right? But this is how kids have been. This is that we have to change. Like adult learning principles is now going to include this technology piece.
Right. Well, when the sub blew up 2 weeks ago, they had millions of hits, people watching this thing. But you know what? People need to get real and get out in the open and go learn about the submarine in real. Go learn about the waterways. Learn about the shoreline. Learn about the animal. Learn things. It's not always about, ooh, let me just go look and see what's happening, a tragedy or a disaster, right?
Well, they have surf cams still, so.
Right.
Right.
Stephanie, one of the great things about the education is the community engagement, and you guys are focused on the place becoming coordinating and facilitating restoration, research, and education, not just for people in Brevard, but across the state of Florida, the entire United States. Knowing that our zoo was voted one of the best zoos, right?
Top three in
the United States. What is the plan to reach out to other people in other states and expand this education and research?
Well, we already through Brevard Zoo partner all over the United States. We're an AZA or Association of Zoos and Aquariums AZA accredited institution, which means we have partners all over the world. But as far as this campaign goes, we know that this is bigger than Brevard County. I mean, the Indian River Lagoon spans 7 different counties, but part of our strategy is making sure that our immediate neighbors are part of this. So even on our campaign cabinet, we have leadership in Volusia, we have leadership in Indian River County, and we have leadership in Orange County, just because it touches all of us. It's part of all of our lives. It's where everyone in these communities are coming on field trips, and it's just a really unique opportunity to educate the next generation and bring everybody into it, because this won't just be, like I said, our aquarium. It'll
it's
be all of ours aquarium.
Yeah, and I think we need to implore that people do renew their membership for the zoo.
Yes.
And we have a couple of minutes left, Zach, and I want to talk a little bit about the economic impact of the aquarium and the Brevard Zoo. Talk to our listeners a little bit about how this affects our economy here in Brevard.
Absolutely. So this aquarium, we've run some economic impact studies that were based off early attendance models. attendance. Our earliest attendance models estimated 500,000, 600,000 guests. At that time, the zoo was only seeing 400. We broke 525 at the zoo last year. So chances are those attendance models are going. But even with that, we're looking at the regional creation of close to 900 jobs and an economic impact of over $85 million annually. So this is ripple effect to the restaurants, the hotels, the fishing guides, the eco-tour companies. If you live, work, or play in Brevard County, this should be something that benefits.
Right. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to support the vision for a world-class aquarium. So give us the website for the Brevard Zoo, or how can someone become a member, a founder, a donator, whatever it is to help this vision.
Absolutely. So the website for the campaign is ourlegacycampaign.org. You can also find it through the Brevard Zoo website. There's a banner at the top, so if brevardzoo.org is where you end up, hit the banner at the top. And there are buttons to be able to donate, to learn more. Some of those buttons send emails to Stephanie and myself, so you will get responses back from us, either via email or a phone call. And as a really important reminder, everything is tax deductible. And so if you are looking for how I can have an impact on my community in a way that's, you know, fairly easy, if you're itemizing, we can do that. Everything's payable over 5 years. You want to be a founder, that's $167 and change a month for the next 5 years.
And it's tax deductible. Write one check for $1,000.
And all tax accountants that are listening to this right now, if there's somebody that needs to donate money in December.
We are a 501c3.
Stephanie, really exactly. Quick with the remaining 30 seconds, any upcoming events? I know Jazzu is coming up, hopefully.
I guess we're doing all kinds of new events. I would definitely ask you to go visit the Brevard Zoo website. We're really getting into, we're having like a barbecue coming up in July. We have Boo at the Zoo coming up all of October. Jazzu, which is incredible, comes in the first weekend in November. And then next year we'll be celebrating our 30th anniversary all year round. So I can only imagine how exciting that's going to be.
And please tell me that you're going to put more sprinklers for this weather for the kids. The kids want sprinkles.
The kids want sprinklers. Yeah. We will every day do our best to try to make sure that it's a wonderful, enjoyable environment, whether it's through shade or misters or...
I'll bring you. just come. Absolutely. Get your membership renewed, yes. Or just buy a ticket.
Yes, thank
Help
you.
Help the zoo.
So Zach and Steph, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us about Brevard Zoo, especially about the aquarium and all the great programs that are out there. We will make sure we post all of that on our website, cedamediainc.com, as well as our Facebook pages. And what a fantastic day. Thank you all for being part of it, sharing the airwaves with us. And make sure you tune in each and every Monday here at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 1510 WWBC for Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.